In my experience, early in my career, I tried to make everybody great at everything, right? And, you know, trying to overdevelop the weaker areas. And what I found was there's only so much road there. You know, someone may not naturally be good at something, and we could help them get proficient or get reasonably solid, but that may not be their area of strength. So you want to make sure that your leaders are consistent and can do things reasonably well. But then there are the areas where they're incredibly good. They're differential. It's something unique about what they bring. Boy, that's where all the leverage is, right? How do we unlock that? And I always say, if somebody is really good at something, why don't I get them to do that more?
Welcome to CEO on the Go, the show about personal and professional growth for busy leaders like you. I'm Gail Lance, and I'm here to help you think differently, solve big problems, and inspire change. It's tough to do on your own and even with a team, but it is possible. So let's get started. Welcome back to another episode. Wow, I've got an exceptional two-part episode on tap because I had the unique opportunity to speak with a Fortune 500 CEO who models authentic leadership and who shares keys to growing a thriving organization with the relentless focus on creating client value. As a side note, I think it's a great follow-up to the previous episode I did with Oscar Trimboli from Australia. Do you remember that conversation when we talked about deep listening leadership, how to really listen and be a good communicator as a leader? I think our guest today excels in that area. And I have to say, there was so much I wanted to cover. So you'll see we touch on many areas related to how to grow a successful organization and just how to grow yourself as a leader. I sat down with Keith Demings, CEO at Assurant, a multi-billion dollar organization that has 13,000 plus employees around the globe. Assurant is a leading global provider of comprehensive risk management solutions for the automotive, lifestyle, and housing protection sectors. The company operates in 21 markets globally, and it partners with some of the biggest brands in the world. They manage a variety of risks, so think property damage, liability, and financial loss, and also theft and natural disasters. It's a B2B2C enterprise. They design insurance, protection products, and support services. And so that helps the businesses that they serve provide premium customer experiences to their end consumers. They do that through a combination of digital intelligence and expert human insights so people can take full advantage of living in a connected world. What was especially impressive about Keith was the way he kept going back to keeping the client focus as the solution to almost any challenge that they face, having that clarity of purpose as the driver in everything that you do. So part one covers where Keith is today and the state of the organization, the success achieved so far. And then part two, which will air next week, focuses more on where the company's going and what Keith is doing to continue his own learning and growth in his role as CEO. I hope this episode inspires you to take a closer look at your own organization and embrace the idea of continual transformation, not just for the company, but for yourself as well. Enjoy my conversation with Keith Demings. Keith, welcome to CEO on the Go. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Great to be here.
Yeah, I always think that people learn best from people who are actually in the CEO role. So it's really such a treat to have you here. And there's so much that I know that we want to cover. You and I've already talked about that. But I thought it would be helpful just to jump in to you know, give listeners a sense of where you are now. I understand you've been in your role for a couple of years. So kind of what's top of mind for you right now? Any specific challenge or opportunity? Kind of give us a snapshot of the picture.
Yeah, and I've been with Assurant now for 26 years. So I've been in the CEO role, to your point, for just over 2 years. It's been a whirlwind. It probably feels longer, honestly. And then there was a period of transition as well before I took the seat which was super helpful. But yeah, it's been a busy couple of years. I'd say we've done a lot of work to transform the organization. So we've gone through a lot of change in terms of our core product focus areas. How do we simplify and make sure that we're focused on product lines where we have real competitive advantages, defensible positions and a right to win? You know, obviously we've navigated COVID. I think we've done a really good job through that. We're moved to a fairly hybrid working environment, which is always, you know, challenging for a lot of different reasons. But I think we've done a really nice job staying connected to our people, driving engagement across our employee base. We've navigated inflation, which was a real challenge in our housing business last year, a challenge in our auto business as well, and then a lot of simplification. So as I think about where we are now, we had a really strong 23, drove significant growth in our earnings as well as earnings per share. And now we're really laser focused on driving growth and capitalizing on some of the momentum that we have within the business, rolling out new clients, a lot of focus on innovation, customer experience, and making sure that we're constantly raising the bar on what clients expect from us.
Yeah. When I was talking to another client about your business, they were asking, you know, given the growth that you've had, has the demand been there? Or is that something that you've had to generate over the years, you know, to really be where you are today?
I mean, everything that we do at Assurant is in partnership with what I would say, you know, the world's largest, most prolific brands across industries. So number one, everything we do is in support of that mission, helping our clients create value for end customers, helping them introduce products that are valuable, drive revenues, but then on the back end, you know, deliver flawlessly in terms of the customer experience, because it really reflects on their brand. And we're really an extension of that as we think about our business model. And yeah, and there's been a lot of growth across the categories that we play in. And because of the nature of our clients, they've tended to be the winners, the ones that are growing, the aggregators of the market. And it's certainly served us well and allowed us to drive a lot of scale in the business.
Yeah, that makes sense. So reflecting back on when you first stepped into the CEO role a couple of years ago, I was just curious to know if there's what that transition was like for you, any surprises? And I know that, like you said, you've been there for so long. You actually started as an intern, right?
I did.
Was that an aspiration that you just had over the years that you would be at this level?
No, if I'm being perfectly honest, definitely not. You know, I joined as an intern in Toronto, Canada. And I was essentially a trainee for 2 years in our sales and marketing department. You know, I didn't really know much about Assurant at the time. And obviously, I spent a lot of time learning and trying to understand how do we create value for clients. And I fell in love with the business and with the culture. But, you know, I didn't know that I'd be here 26 years later. I didn't have aspirations, honestly, to leave Canada. I love Canada. I love living in Toronto. But obviously, I love the company and the culture of the organization. So when the opportunity 10 years ago presented itself to move to Atlanta to lead our international division, you know, I was afraid that if I didn't do it, I probably need to go do something else and work for a different company in Canada. I was going to be in the way for succession planning within our Canadian team. And I didn't want to leave the company because I did love the people we work with, the culture that we had. And then once I got to the US, I probably had more ambition about what I could do now that I was in more ingrained in the, you know, the senior levels of the enterprise. But, you know, it certainly evolved over time, but it's not where I started, that's for sure.
Yeah. So going back to when you were just new in your CEO role, was there anything in particular that helped you transition into that? I know some of my clients are literally kind of thrown in and at a time when they may not expect to be in the role. Others have grown into it and they've been mentored into it. Some don't have a mentor. So what was your transition like and kind of in those early moments, can you remember what was happening then?
Yeah. So, you know, I was really lucky. We had a lot of continuity in terms of our leadership over the years and a culture of promoting from within in a lot of cases. I had a really strong relationship with the board. I ran our largest business unit for several years. So that, you know, kept me front and center in a lot of board meetings, which is helpful. But I would say our CEO, Alan Kohlberg at the time, you know, was incredibly gracious with me. He was a tremendous mentor. We actually had a 7-month official transition period. So I was announced, you know, in May to take that role as of January of 2022. So I had 7 months working side by side with Alan to do the transition. It was well understood within the company. I started to attend earnings calls and played a more significant role with the board in terms of long-term strategic planning. So that was really, really fortunate. And I would say just a great job in terms of succession planning and then transition and execution. So, you know, when I took the job on January 1st, I felt like I was doing it for 6 or 7 months before I got to that point. So it was somewhat fluid to take that role.
That's good. And that's good for listeners to listen to who know they need to focus more on succession planning, but may not be doing it in the way that they need to. It's so important. You had mentioned the culture that had kept you there. And so I was really curious to know specifically, you know, what about the culture did you find to be so compelling enough? Because especially now, many people won't stay long in a role and culture can shift so quickly too. So what were the elements or describe the culture?
Yeah, and I think it's a bit of our secret sauce, honestly, our culture. And it starts with the fact that we're super energized about serving clients. As I said before, everything we do is in partnership with clients, and we have a very much a service mentality across our teams. I think that's one thing.
Do you hire for that? Do you look for that in the people that you hire or cultivate that or both? Or
yeah, both. But it, you know, for sure we build it and it's, we're just a unique company. So not everybody is wired that way. But that's where you see a lot of people that have been here. You know, our average tenure on our management committee last we looked was 17 years. We got a lot of long tenured employees. We build deep, long trusting relationships with clients. And that doesn't happen overnight. So then a lot of times we, you know, we've got business leaders that have been here for a long, long time. And they're expert in our clients, they're expert in our industries, but they know how to serve and problem solve. And I think we have clarity of purpose as a company. And everything that we do follows that same model of we're here to serve clients and help them be successful, help them innovate, create value for customers, drive revenue, et cetera. And then at the back end, deliver exceptional service. So, but in terms of the culture beyond that, I'd say, you know, we're always transforming. You know, we're always looking to evolve and improve how we deliver and execute. And I think part of that is our clients expect us to. The bar is always raising. They have expectations. Their customers have expectations. And I think all of, you know, our journey has always been about making things better. And then we've got an incredible focus on teamwork and collaboration and probably a lot less internal politics. We're here to work together to solve problems. We leave our titles at the door. There's not a lot of hierarchy, and we roll up our sleeves and solve problems. And I think that, yeah, that's the fun stuff.
I was going to ask, how do you do that? How do people leave that at the door? People want to know how you can, you know, when you say office politics is not the issue there. That's such a challenge for so many other people, especially in large companies.
Yeah, and we're a large company that I think operates more like a family business in some ways. We have 13,000 employees, but you know, our team is very well connected, very well aligned. We tend to prioritize at an enterprise level. We've eliminated the silos that used to exist where individual businesses, you know, had their own distinct priorities, and you know, there was no collaboration across the organization. We've centralized.
What was the key to doing that? What was the key to building that collaboration then?
Yeah, I think first of all, creating some centers of excellence, shared services that create leverage across the organization, building global platforms, leveraging common technology, and sharing best practices, and then just getting the right leaders with the right mindset. And, you know, if you've got a culture that you want to protect, making sure that you don't have leaders that violate that culture, that don't align to it, because that can quickly create conflict in the organization. And I think we've done a really good job, you know, setting the tone of what we expect people to do every day as leaders, how we expect them to communicate, to inspire, to motivate, and then just reinforcing these are the people that are getting the opportunity. And they're getting promoted, and we're promoting people that have the right DNA, and then everybody knows what to emulate as they go forward.
Yeah, I love that, reinforcing what you want. I know that with some of the other organizations I work with, the larger the organization, there could be pockets of toxicity or leadership that really is not up to par. So it sounds like you're doing a great job of catching that early or mitigating that.
Yeah, and I think for us, it's interesting, right? It's about what our clients want. So if you think about, like, who do we listen to? We listen to our clients, we listen to customers, and we try to solve problems. So we don't have our own agenda. Our agenda is, how do we create value for our clients and understand their needs, and then see where we need to drive the business to make sure we meet the clients where they're going. So I think that allows us to align to something common across the enterprise. And it's not my own individual goals in my department. It's, what are the clients looking for?
Yeah, sharp customer focus or client focus. Absolutely. So when you're trying to stay focused on that and you see the changing environment around you, do people tend to respond in a way that helps them move forward, or do you see much resistance to change? Because you've really had to navigate your path based on what you said your clients are doing. So how do you operate in this kind of constantly changing environment?
Well, and I think we look for ways to optimize, and we celebrate, when we do something innovative and something new, and not everything works, right? So being willing to invest, try new things, fail quickly, and learn and evolve, I'd say that's really important culturally. But the other thing is, we try to look at problems as opportunities, right? If we see something that's not working the way we want, it's very easy to, look at that, dissect it. How did we get here? Let's second guess all the decisions that were made before. I would say you do a little bit of that to understand the root cause. But as soon as you understand the problem, we pivot really quickly to, okay, now how do we make this better? How do we turn this into an opportunity? How do we create more leverage as we go forward? And putting all of our energy on the outcomes that we're trying to drive and trying to achieve, and not assigning blame and a lot of Monday morning quarterback, that can really crush the culture of a company and put all the energy in the wrong places, and it pits people against each other. So we tend to look forward, solve problems, move quickly, and execute with conviction.
Mm-hmm. Is there any trend that you're seeing overall? You serve such a wide range of different markets. Any trend that you're seeing that you're trying to align to with what your clients are experiencing or that have been most impactful to your business?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've invested a lot in digitizing the customer experience. Our clients across the board, they want to eliminate friction. They want to serve the customer the way the customer wants to be served. But in a lot of cases, it's digital tools, self-service, low touch. How do we do things more efficiently and more effectively so the consumer gets served? If it's online and digital only, beautiful. If it's a single call, great. But how do you avoid the friction that, would have been built up 10 or 15 years ago in a lot of the processes? I'd say that is a common theme. And obviously we measure net promoter scores, customer experience. We look at a lot of KPIs and we share all of the data transparently with our clients, whether it's about operational performance, financial performance, that transparency, and then partnering together to work on how do we optimize this for the greater good is also really important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, building trust. So, gosh, there's so much that I want to talk about that we could cover. And I know I want to dive deeper into how you're looking at trends and anticipating change going forward. But I also just wanted to touch on how you handle your own role and the stress that's inevitable with anyone who's in a senior level role. It could be that you're seeing people have different expectations that you're trying to work with, or you have difficult decisions that you're trying to make. What is it that keeps you centered or operating the best that you can? How do you handle the stress? That's the bottom line.
I mean, I think first thing, you build a great team. If you've got great people around you that are inspired and motivated, that are experts, like make sure that you've got that team and that they're fully leveraged. And I tend to be someone who believes in playing to our strengths. We've all got lots of things to work on. But boy, there's some things that each of our team members do incredibly well. How do we double down and leverage the strength and make sure we're engaging the team appropriately? That's one. I'd say staying calm. If I got stressed every time there was a challenge or an issue, I'd be stressed a lot of the time because there's always challenges and issues, especially when we're trying to constantly raise the bar and execute flawlessly. So when the bar is high, things don't work perfectly and that creates stress. So I would say stay calm, recognize we've been here before, rally the right people and think about how to solve the problem. You know, we get a lot of stress thinking about the problem. I'd rather say, let's get to a whiteboard. Let's think about the options and the alternatives, get the right people in the room and try to chart a course forward that improves the situation. So a lot of that energy around outcome orientation for me takes the stress level down.
Yeah, it sounds like you're shifting the focus from the problem to solution. And do you have a secret for staying calm or something that works for you?
I think, you know, it's practice. You know, you build a thick skin. You know, I've been here, like I said, 26 years. There's lots of issues and we've overcome a lot of things. So I try to remember some of the bigger, more complex challenges that we actually successfully solved. And I think, well, if we could solve that, this is not insurmountable. Let's go ahead and get after it. And it's that positive energy, you know, that galvanizes people toward, you know, changing for the future. I think that's important. But I think having a history of success solving problems, and a lot of times we solve problems with clients, it actually improves their relationship. You go through fire, something isn't working perfectly, you take accountability, you own it, you build a path forward, you execute, deliver, and then all of a sudden the trust level actually gets better because we work through something together for the greater good. So there's a lot of good that comes out of issues, and as long as you actually focus on them the right way.
Yeah, I like how you're going back and saying we've been through tough stuff before, or we can, you know, see this through a new lens to shift the perspective that you have. How do you deal with other people's stress or tension or frustration? Because even if you're working on it yourself, a lot of times there are other people who really need some help in being able to see clearly and do the work that they need to do. So is there a way that you help your employees when they're going through especially difficult times?
Yeah, I'd probably say we're hard on the problem and soft on the people, right? You know, so taking stress away from people that are trying to navigate an issue and say, it's okay, this is a problem, let's understand it and let's build a path, and helping them stay calm. Because oftentimes, you know, if the leader of the organization isn't calm, it's very hard for the next level down to stay calm. So for me, it's like give them the right to stay calm and kind of work through these things methodically, and don't dial up the drama, the friction, the stress, because I think we can create a lot of stress for our teams and how we lead. And I think as leaders, we've got to take that stress away from our teams so they can actually focus on doing good work and not worry about the consequences of an issue.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious to know, can you explain how you come together as a leadership team, some of the activities or processes? Do you have regular meetings, training, development, anything?
Yeah, we meet every single week as a management committee for 2 or 3 hours, and we have very specific agenda items. We've got a set of overall enterprise priorities that our management committee has agreed on are critically important for 2024 and beyond. And then we update that, obviously, as the world changes quickly in our, you know, in our environment. So sometimes things drop off, things get added on. So constantly keeping an eye on that as the dynamics move around. And then we meet with our top 120 leaders as well regularly, the Assurant leadership team overall, to try and create alignment. So there's a tremendous amount of communication. I'd say we're very transparent. We try to be very direct and honest in our communication. And we want communication to be two ways, right? We want to hear from our teams and learn from our teams as much as the other way. So I'd say there's a ton of energy collaborating as a leadership team.
How do you create that two-way communication? What is the means for doing that?
Yeah, and I think probably a lot of different ways. I mean, obviously we do surveys, all employee surveys, which is important. We do what we call Connect Lives. You know, every month we get together with our global employees and we share updates on two or three topics, engaging various leaders across the organization. And then we have open Q&A and we take all comers, all questions. Sometimes the questions are more awkward, and you know, we just take them head on and try to be honest with how we're leading the company and the decisions that we're making. So I'd say there's a number of different forums that we've created, feedback mechanisms to try to get input and suggestions from our teams, and being honest and clear and direct is probably the greatest gift that, you know, that we've been giving to our employees.
Yeah. I just interviewed another expert on listening, and he was saying one of the best ways to gauge how effective a company is doing in listening to their employees is how they're making changes based on the feedback that they're getting in those surveys.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting as we think about COVID and hybrid working, you know, obviously early days of COVID, we reacted incredibly quickly. We migrated to work from home and we did it really, really fast and it was quite successful. And then, you know, 2-3 years later, you know, you've got this opportunity to decide, okay, what's your go forward strategy? And looking at what we've been able to do during that period of time, the service levels that we've executed, how we've delivered for clients, and then feedback from our employees on, do they value flexibility? Do they value the hybrid environment? What kind of employee net promoter scores have we been getting? And making decisions then based on all that feedback to say, okay, what's the right path forward for Assurant that's true to our culture, that's going to align with our values? Every company's going to solve this problem differently. And looking inside yourself and saying, let's look at all of our own data and listen to our teams to make good informed decisions, as opposed to looking at what every other company is dealing with. Because every culture is different. Every structure is very different. So I'd say we have a lot of integrity to protecting our own culture and our own teams.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier that you really leverage people's strengths. And I was curious to know how you know what those strengths are. Who determines that? How is that decided?
Yeah, I mean, I think you know it when you see it, right? There's a little bit of judgment there. But I would say it's interesting. You know, we can think back to leaders that we've worked with across, you know, the decades and say there's some leaders that were really good at certain things and maybe not great at other things. And in my experience, early in my career, I tried to make everybody great at everything, right? And, you know, trying to overdevelop the weaker areas. And what I found was there's only so much road there. You know, someone may not naturally be good at something and we can help them get proficient or get reasonably solid, but that may not be their area of strength. So you want to make sure that your leaders are consistent and can do things reasonably well. But then there are the areas where they're incredibly good, they're differential, it's something unique about what they bring. Boy, that's where all the leverage is, right? How do we unlock that? And I always say, if somebody is really good at something, why don't I get them to do that more? Why don't I get them to spend most of their time leveraging that strength instead of being okay at other things and then practicing those things to sort of get a little bit better? So for me, it's all been leverage strength and double down and move faster. And part of the beauty of being a company that's focused on diversity and inclusion, we bring different thoughts, different skill sets, and then figure out how do we leverage different people's strengths. And it's made us, I think, really successful.
Yeah, that's good. I know years ago, I've been working with organizations that had very complicated leadership models, and you had to have, you know, 20 different skills that you were trying to work on. So I love what you're saying, because at the end of the day, it's truly about what you do, I think, naturally well, that you can build on. So I love that. Okay, this ends part one of my conversation with Keith Demings. I know you'll want to tune in next week to part two. Until then, consider one action you'll take based on what you've heard so far. And as always, have a great rest of the week doing the work that matters to you. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, be sure to share this episode with someone else who might benefit or leave a review. You can join my email list by going to workmatters.com so you don't miss an episode. And there you can learn more about ways we serve mission-driven leaders like you. If there's a challenge you want to discuss, I'd love to hear from you. In the meantime, keep growing as a leader, inspiring change, and doing the work that matters to you.